We are down to football's final four. The question is it the best four? We're going to look at the numbers. We're going to look at these matchups as we get prepared to talk about the teams that are battling for the right to go to the big game, the big dance, the Super Bowl. We're also going to preview the Shrine Bowl, the oldest college all-star game in the nation, being coached this year by the New England Patriots and Atlanta Falcons coaching staffs, respectively. And of course, we're going to look at the quarterback matchups this week. We've got two all-pros and MVP candidates, and we've got Mr. Irrelevant against Mr. Comeback. We're going to talk about all that. And of course, with me to do it is Pro Football Network's senior NFL analyst, Mr. Trey Wingo. How you doing, bud?
Brett, I'm doing great. Let's just get something out of the way real quick because you just addressed it, right? Do we have the four best teams? And the answer is a resounding yes.
Yeah.
Let me explain why. Just so if anybody has any illusions that these aren't the best four teams, the combined record of these four teams playing heading into Championship Sunday over the last 10 weeks, you want to take a guess?
You tell me.
34-3. 34-3. Okay.
Where does that is that typical? It's
the best ever. It's literally the best ever winning percentage we've ever had for the four teams in terms of a heater representing Championship Sunday. Let me see if I can do the next number here. 919 winning percentage over the past 10 weeks. San Francisco 10-0, Cincinnati 9-0, Kansas City 8-1, Philadelphia 7-2, and both of Philadelphia's losses came without their starting quarterback. So what we have on Sunday, which I believe is the best football day of the year, better than the Super Bowl. I will happily explain my thoughts on that if you want.
Yeah.
But we have the best teams that have been the most consistent all year long and also have been the best down the stretch and into the postseason. It is a rarity that we get this group. The next best record was 1998, was 33-3. Atlanta 9-0, Minnesota 9-0, Jets 8-1, Denver 7-2. Before that, if we go back to 1976. So we are looking at just the best four teams we could possibly, and I know people in Buffalo don't want to hear that, and I know people in a couple of places probably don't want to hear that, but it's true. It's just true. These are the teams that have been the most consistent all year long and have been the best when it mattered the most.
So is it fair to say then, looking at that none of the teams being here is a surprise, or at least is the way maybe San Francisco is, the fact that San Francisco made it here is contributing to that best record? Is that surprising to you with all they've gone through?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're 7-0 with a rookie quarterback. They've won 12 straight games. But let me look at it another way. No one should be surprised that these teams are here because we have three teams from last year's Championship Sunday that are back for a second go at it. So, San Francisco can win with anybody playing quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is the reason the Chiefs are here, and Joe Burrow is the reason the Bengals are here. Now, the Eagles have crashed the party replacing the Rams from last year. But these three teams, with the way they're set up, they're not going away anytime soon. And just to sort of really emphasize why picking the right quarterback matters.
Yeah.
In the 52 years of the Bengals' existence prior to drafting Joe Burrow, they had 5 playoff wins. Since drafting Joe Burrow, they have 5 playoff wins. And let's take it one step further, okay? Before Patrick Mahomes became the starter.
How many years before Joe Burrow did they accumulate?
52. One every 10.2 years.
And just to be clear, Joe Burrow has not been playing football for 52 years, right? He's only been in the league 3 years.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Okay.
Just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. And 1 year he was basically gone because of the knee injury.
That's
so,
right.
And now let's take a look at the Chiefs, right? Chiefs have been around forever. Dallas Texans, old AFL. They've been around a long ass time.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
Before Patrick Mahomes became the starter, you want to guess how many AFC championship games they hosted?
I'm going to say three.
You're off by 3. 0. They had never hosted a championship game. And since Patrick Mahomes became the starter, they've done nothing but host championship games. 5 straight. 5 straight. Again, the right quarterback really matters.
You know what's interesting too about the quarterback, Trey, is that none of these guys are like what we would consider seasoned vets, right? This almost feels like the official dawn of a new era.
I'm glad you brought that up. the combined age of the quarterbacks in the NFC Championship game, I got to get the number exact right. I think it's 47 years and 208 days on Sunday. And in case you're wondering, yes, that is the youngest matchup quarterback-wise we've ever had in a championship game in NFL history.
This is it's really striking at that fact. And look, I'm going to say something, and this is going to, like, Tom Brady, you should not at any reason make a decision based on this. But I am ready for Tom Brady to step aside. I'm ready to not care what Aaron Rodgers goes, because I want this era to dominate the next years. All I want to talk about moving forward are these guys. It's their time, right, Trey? And this is being it, making it to this Sunday. It proves that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I'll add Josh Allen and Trevor Lawrence in there too. Yeah, yeah. Like these are, like, Dak Prescott was the oldest quarterback in the divisional round, and he was 29.
Right. That's crazy. That's crazy
that someone, the last time the oldest quarterback in divisional weekend was under 30, was 2004 when Peyton Manning was 28 years old. So we are seeing a real, real changing of the guard here. Like, that is not the last time Trevor Lawrence and Patrick Mahomes will battle. That's definitely not going to be the last time Joe Burrow and Josh Allen's going to battle. We have special things happening here with the quarterback play, and it is absolutely their time. And it's not like Brady versus Manning, because there are four or five guys. I believe two have really separated themselves. Like, I don't think it's really close. but we have five guys I think you have to have in the mix at all times.
What I wish people would do, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. We don't have to name anybody, but the commentary, everything you've highlighted to this point, accentuates the idea that we don't need to contrive narratives to be excited for what's going to unfold. And yet, of course, the way sometimes these things go, we start getting into, like, if
the NFL is rigged,
Patrick Mahomes, or it's just like we have to create these crazy scenarios to drive up this, opposition to something, instead of just saying, like, man, we are living in the best time of football in years. Is that a crazy statement?
No, I listen, obviously it helps with the rule changes in the NFL. Let's just be honest about that. But these guys are really good. They're really good. And we can get into the if Joe Burrow beats Patrick Mahomes again debate if you want. I have some thoughts there.
That's shocking to me. This doesn't seem like something you care about.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, we'll get into the game a little bit. Since you sort of brought it up, Peter Schrager, who I love on Good Morning Football, did this.
Said I wasn't going to name anybody, and then right away.
Peter, come on now. Like, do you remember the time where I put in a fake name for one of the Chiefs receivers and nobody didn't know that one? Okay. Like,
correct.
Joe Burrow is throwing to Boyd, Higgins, Chase, a rejuvenated Hayden Hurst, and has Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon. Okay. Patrick Mahomes is throwing to, Jags, for lack of a better term. Okay. Yeah. There is a slight talent differential between the group of receivers that Joe Burrow is throwing to and the group of receivers like Juju Smith-Schuster, he's fine. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is fine. Kadarius Toney could be really good. Yeah. Justin Watson is okay. Sky Moore is a rookie.
Time out. Right there. Yeah. Justin Watson is playing key moments in the wide receiver corps. And Justin, I love you, baby.
We appreciate what you're doing.
Nothing against you.
But don't get that part twisted. Like, don't think the teams are equal.
Right.
The quarterbacks may be, but the teams are not equal. Like, the Chiefs have one dude on defense. Now, he's a great dude in Chris Jones. Like, he is literally, I believe that he's more important to the Chiefs than Nick Bosa is to the 49ers.
I wanted, while we're on this topic, just really quick, we had said we did not feel that he was getting enough love as a defensive player of the year candidate.
Yeah.
I, for one, amongst all the snubs that I feel have happened this year, was very happy to see him as a finalist.
Absolutely.
I don't know that he'll win it. Yeah. But
no, it's probably going to go to Bosa.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, look at who Bosa is lining up with. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at like Hufanga, Warner, Armstead. I mean, they have so many players.
Lots of dudes.
And they say, Chris, do your thing, baby. And maybe Karlaftis will get a half sack and, you know, Nick Bolton will make a couple of tackles. Willie Gay may pick something up. And those are good players, but they're not great players.
Right.
Chris Jones is the one great player on defense for Kansas
now,
City.
Now, doesn't that speak a lot to the job that, and I've said this and I've gotten so much crap for this, that I believe firmly, and I put my list out earlier today on Twitter, that Andy Reid for me is the runner up for coach of the year, me personally. And this is why. We've talked about on the offensive side, the team they're going up against, Joe Burrow and the Bengals, they've got these guys. Patrick Mahomes has guys. He's got a couple guys.
Now he has Kelce. Kelce is a freak show.
For sure.
A freak show.
But one, right? That's it. Yeah. On defense, if we put them up against the 49ers, which, by the way, is what I have as my eventual Super Bowl matchup. We'll get to that in a bit. On defense, we go Bosa, but then they got the best linebacker in Fred Warner. They got the safety who's Troy Polamalu reincarnated, right?
He's amazing.
All of these things. And yet, here the Chiefs are, and even the books are not ready to fully count them out. They opened as a pick 'em while Patrick Mahomes is on one.
No. They opened as a 3-point favorite.
Excuse me. Yes.
They opened as a 3-point favorite, and then it swung back the other way. I think it's now down to one. I haven't checked since Patrick was a full participant in practice today. Patrick was a full participant in practice today, and you sent me that little clip of him walking off the podium, and I retweeted it with, this will be analyzed more than the Zapruder film. The comments are hilarious. Look at him raise his right elbow as he walks up to adjust for the pain. Somebody even said, I bet they had that guy walk across the stage in the blue jeans, so you couldn't really see how he's going down the steps. I'm like, brother, that's some reporter from a blog in Kansas City going to get his mic flag off the podium. Okay. The Chiefs PR people did not say, hey, Jim from One Kansas City Pride, here's what I need you to do. When you see Patrick exiting to the left, you come across right to left and make sure you time it up perfectly so your blue jeans block us looking at the brace of the ankle as it takes the first step down the stage. It's like, what are you doing, man? Oh, you watch one too many Oliver Stone films.
Oh, that's it, dude. It's like watching JFK. By the way, Caesars, our good friends over at Caesars, which
big believer in those guys.
We should make a bit of an announcement later. I think we could do that. But the guys over Caesars right now, it's a pick 'em. It's a pick 'em.
This spread is like a roller coaster. He's hurt. He's okay. He's hurt. He's okay. He threw it in completion. There's a brace.
That's the value of Patrick Mahomes. That's how much he means, not to just the Chiefs, but to the game and to the Super Bowl. I know what that is. Yeah, that's
MVP.
He won
the Pro Football Writers today, and he's going to win the
AP will also do it, right? Because they pretty much go and lock step.
Yeah. I mean, they've differed a couple times, but I just don't think it's close for all the reasons we've already discussed.
And that's it. But just getting back to my other point here on Andy Reid, as a coach, yes, he's got Patrick Mahomes to work with, Travis Kelce. But that the rest of their roster, and we talked about Brett Veach. Maybe this is really a Brett Veach love letter, that he has done just an amazing job building a team.
Well, the Kadarius, right now they have three receivers under contract for next year. Just three.
Right.
Sky Moore, rookie. Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Remember, Juju's on a one-year deal. Mecole's deal is up. So it's Sky Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Kadarius Toney. Those are the three wide receivers we know are going to be there in Kansas City next year. I'm sure they can find a way to lure somebody, because as Kadarius Toney once said, it's Patrick Mahomes. Veach has done an amazing job. But to your point about Andy Reid,
yes,
it is funny. Of course Nick Sirianni's on the list. Of course Nick Sirianni's on the list, because they are the number one seed. Well, they're the number one seed, and they're doing it without A.J. Brown on one side and Devontae Smith on the other side. To appreciate – you know what Andy Reid's problem is? Bill Belichick. Yeah. Andy Reid's problem is Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And, by the way, what happened when Bill Belichick lost Tom Brady? Ain't been going too well, okay? So Andy Reid is going to his fifth straight AFC championship game. He also went to four straight NFC championship games with Donovan McNabb. And I get it. Mm-hmm. They only went to one Super Bowl. I understand that. But it is freaking hard, man, to host one of these things. He's done it four straight, or he went to four straight in Philadelphia with Donovan McNabb, And now he has another quarterback, a better quarterback, and he's gone to five in a row. Like, if that's not great coaching, I can't help you. That's the thing of it,
it's almost like the award is now being designed for coaches who took over bad teams and did really well in their first or two, you know, 1 or 2 years. Yeah. And Andy Reid's being penalized for just being consistently freaking awesome, right?
Yeah. And by the way, like, I would put Zach Taylor on that list too. The Bengals were 4-4. They had a brand new offensive line that was not gelling. They couldn't get anything going. And then they just said, we're good. And they ripped off all these wins in a row. I mean, like, yeah. Zach Taylor has done an amazing job after almost getting run out of the building his first year.
I admittedly was one of the people who was looking to run him out. So
Zach has done an amazing job.
Sorry, yeah. Zach.
All good.
The Bengals still have offensive line problems. The Chiefs going to be looking for receivers. There's a host of teams, Trey, who didn't make it to the postseason. And the NFL draft is where they'll have the opportunity to build and add to those teams. And the first real big event that matters in draft season, right? And that's the right draft season, it's PFN draft season, is the East-West Shrine Bowl. And with us right now to talk about the East-West Shrine Bowl being hosted at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas is our good friend, Eric Galco. Let's bring him in to the studio. Eric, how you doing, man?
I am doing great. I'm here in one of our meeting rooms where the Bill Belichick and Wingo Patriots will be here all week long watching film, walking to players. So I'm excited, ready to go for the Shrine Bowl, man.
It looks like it's a dinner for 47 behind you, which is really kind of interesting.
This is how they ask for it. This is how they ask for it. So this is Bill Belichick and the Patriots office all week long.
Perfect. Okay.
So that's the let's start there, Eric. The two coaching staffs that the NFL and the Shrine Bowl have selected to coach the East and West rosters are the New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons. Can you clarify for everyone at home that this isn't like a couple of Patriots interns coming to coach? Like, Bill Belichick's here.
Yeah, it's a cool opportunity because the Patriots and Bill Belichick, Gerard Mayo, and newly hired Bill O'Brien will be here all week long. And they'll be meeting, talking about, I'm sure, Patriots business outside of the Shrine Bowl and the draft process. But they'll be here being able to be like flies on the wall in the back of these meeting rooms, right? Watch their coaches perform as coaches in a job that we want to kind of interview them for the future and let them get development, but also watching these players interact with these coaches. So it's a chance for kind of Bill Belichick to still be the head coach, but be even one level removed further from being a part of it. So it's an awesome opportunity for the Patriots coaches to evaluate these coaches, but also these players all week long in practice. So Bill Belichick, Bill O'Brien, Gerard Mayo, and also Arthur Smith of the Falcons are going to be here all week long and be involved, but they're going to let their coaches be more involved day to day and not micromanage much maybe they usually do on a usual day.
So typically we see the coaching staffs get involved in the All-Star games. Now there's not just going to be the two NFL coaching staffs coaching the game. Every team is going to be represented throughout the week of practice and then at the game itself. Can you speak to the process of what those guys are doing during practice? Do they have the opportunity to talk to players? Are they involved in the drills? What is that looking like?
You mean the coaches besides the Patriots and Falcons?
Yeah, for the other teams in the league.
Yeah, coaches from other teams, obviously executives, GMs, scouts from other teams will be here all week long for practice. So in the morning every day, our players will be out at our practice facilities, on-field work led by the Patriots and Falcons, but they'll be able to watch practice, observe how these guys are kind of learning information. You know, usually how it goes early in the week, these guys are doing more one-on-ones, athletic-based drills. That post-end of the week, it's much more about team stuff, 7-on-7, 9-on-7, et cetera, too. But everyone's getting a chance to evaluate these guys all morning. And then we take a lot of pride in having a really good interview process for these players. And the All-Star game, the NFL Combine, sometimes pro days, those top 30 visits happen in March and April. Like, it's all about the interview process to get a feel for who these guys might be. And I think for a lot of smart teams, talking to the Patriots a year ago, they care not only who has high character, but who's going to fit their locker room, right? Sometimes you don't want a big personality in your meeting room when you already have a big personality there. Maybe you're missing that as part of your meeting room and you want to find that guy. So it's a chance for these teams not only know who has good character, but also who they may want for their locker room too. So these NFL teams will have over 30 hours across the week to talk to each one of our players. And every one of our guys leaves the Shrine Bowl having talked to every single NFL team at least once or twice.
All right, Eric, before we brought you on, we were sort of talking about some of the things that needs to be fixed, for lack of a better term, in the two teams that are playing in the AFC Championship game. Obviously, right now, the Bengals are missing three starters on their offensive line. And the Chiefs, as we said, only have three wide receivers under contract for next year. So let's give us a couple of names that you think really might pop starting at the East-West Shrine game at wide receiver and offensive line?
Yeah, wide receiver, I think, is one of our stronger positions. We'll have a first-round pick here for sure. Depends on how high he can go in that first round. That's Zay Flowers at Boston College. He's a mix between, get excited, DeSean Jackson and Jalen Waddle put together as one receiver. So pretty dynamic player. He'll be a first-round pick. We'll see how early he goes, maybe the top 15, 20 picks. And then
so he's DeWaddle. Like fantastic.
DeWaddle, there we go. We've also got guys like Bryce Ford Wheaton of West Virginia, and Justin Shorter of Florida. Both of those guys have a lot of the same makeup that DK Metcalf did coming out of college. Physical freaks, 6'4", 220, can run a low 4'4". So they'll be really impressive all week long. Jacob Copeland of Maryland, he might challenge the NFL combine record for fastest 40-yard dash time set a year ago by Tyquan Thornton of the Shrine Bowl. So receivers loaded with all types of body types. And then offensive line, so important. A couple guys I'm excited to see. Carter Warren of Pitt, he's a guy that kind of has some first-round mock drafts coming into the year and had an injury midseason, but has worked his butt off to get healthy, and he'll be here all week long at practice. And then two Arkansas guys, Ricky Stromberg at center, Dalton Wagner at tackle, both guys that are plug-and-play NFL starters. So some really good talent at both those positions.
That's great. A lot of people may not realize that the Shrine Bowl has a huge history of sending players to the NFL, one of which – I believe is playing on conference championship weekend. He's playing quite a big role. Am I correct in saying that Brock Purdy is a Shrine Bowl alumni?
He was here a year ago, and I've talked to a lot of teams this draft cycle to say, hey, where did we miss on Brock? Why didn't we notice him earlier in the draft process? Why did he fall to Mr. Irrelevant? But also, which is a common thing when a guy like Brock kind of emerges, is who's the next Brock Purdy? I think the better question for NFL teams to ask is, like, why did Brock Purdy fall in the draft? And my background before this was at the XFL, and I was looking for quarterbacks who could improvise, who could make plays that weren't there, and who wouldn't make mistakes on early downs. That's what Brock Purdy does. That's why we signed Taylor Heineke, PJ Walker back then. And I think what teams in the NFL are starting to recognize is there's so much talent at running back, receiver, and tight end right now. Your quarterback doesn't have to make a lot of plays from the pocket. You don't need necessarily Anthony Richardson to be a top-tier NFL team. Joe Burrow's at his best when he's not missing throws, and then he makes the one or two throws that win that kind of game. I think guys like Brock, Joe Burrow, Tom Brady, and early in his career, who kind of people are sharing similarities between Brock Purdy and Tom Brady's rise early on in New England, I think NFL teams recognizing, I don't need the elite talents. I need guys that know what they're doing, can improvise, and can make plays. And I think guys like Dorian Thompson-Robinson of UCLA, who'll be at the Shrine Bowl, very similar to Brock Purdy. Started 4 years in college. You kind of forgot about him because he's been there so long, but can improvise, athletic, high character. So I think teams are learning from Brock Purdy and maybe why he fell in the draft and why he's worked to kind of change how they evaluate quarterback position moving forward.
I do think it's kind of funny, like people are saying, who's the next Brock Purdy? Do we even know what Brock Purdy is? I mean, like, it's not on a heater, don't get me wrong, but like, it's kind of a small sample size. So I'm not convinced like we know what Brock Purdy's going to be in 17 games. We have seven. So I find that interesting. I think one of the reasons he fell is his last year wasn't very good. Like, he was really good, and then his senior year he fell off. You know, it's the same reason why Trey Smith was a six-rounder by the Kansas City Chiefs. He had first-round talent, but there was a medical clearance that a lot of teams wouldn't let it go, and I think a lot of teams are regretting that decision at this point.
I think what Brock showed at the Shrine Bowl, just speaking around him before the event and then during the event too, is that Brock showed that if he was your practice squad quarterback, your third quarterback, your backup, or your starter, he's going to fit into your quarterback room. The confidence, the lack of need for things. And I think that's what teams maybe missed on Brock Purdy, that, hey, this guy was going to be an NFL player for 10 years, first round, seventh round undrafted, practice squad starter. He was going to be that kind of guy. And those guys are pretty rare, right? Those guys are guys that you want in your room because they're going to help your starter, or they can be your starter when time's up now. And now Brock Purdy's gone from practice squad, third string, seventh round pick to replacing Trey Lance, traded for three first round picks to be the starter for the Niners next year as well too. So it's crazy how that happens, but teams have learned a lot from Brock Purdy in the interview process from a year ago.
Now two quick things before we let you go, and thank you for the time. The first, you mentioned Tom Brady. I'm not mistaken in saying he is also a Shrine Bowl alumnus.
Yes, yes.
As well as Jimmy Garoppolo as well. I mean, the Shrine Bowl has been sending
great John Elway.
Elway forever. The Shrine Bowl, unlike some of the other all-star games that are out there, has a really unique cause attached to it. And Eric, in our conversations off the air, you and I have talked about how meaningful that is for me, you know, for PFN to be a part of it this year. Can you talk a little bit about the Shriners Hospital and how long this game and why this game is so important, not just for the players on the field, but for what it gives back to?
You know, it's funny. Last year was my first year at the Shrine Bowl, and I've been in the Shrine Bowl many times as an evaluator before being a part of it. But last year, I got to experience Media Day, which happens on the Wednesday before the game, where our Shriners patients and our Shriners hospital people are here along with the players for the whole day, and get a chance to see these players who I've focused all week long on the draft process, on NFL interviews. They kind of relax a bit, let their guard down, but also meet these patients who have gone through so much in their past and learn about it. I think it really exemplifies why the Shriners Hospital and this event is so special. I talked to Matthew Butler of Tennessee, a fifth round pick from the Raiders a year ago, just earlier today. And he was like, hey, can I come to Media Day this year? I missed it. I was there last year. I had so much fun. Can I go back? And I think The Shriners Hospital does so many amazing things. They have over 20 locations across North America. They help children and families all across the country, regardless of their ability to pay. So amazing work. And I think these players who are going to be so influential in their communities and their cities and on social media to learn about this, I think that's what the Shrine Bowl is all about for these players in this organization too. So 98 years of this, and I think the mission and the message is really kind of resonating with a lot of people in the business.
Yeah, well, here's to 98 more. Pro Football Network is honored to be a part of it with you this year, covering the event. We will have people on the ground in Las Vegas at the home of the Las Vegas Raiders, Allegiant Stadium. First-class facilities, first-class organization. We got a first-class roster coming to you for the game. Eric, can't wait to see it. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk more as we get closer and into the draft season.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Eric. See you.
Trey, I know how much you love the NFL draft. I think When we first started talking about you joining Pro Football Network, that was like one of the things we really connected on early on. And guys, by the way, once the Super Bowl is over, we switch over to Draft Insiders, and our good friend Tony Pauline joins us. Trey, it's hard. It's weird to talk about the draft with conference championship coming up, the Super Bowl coming up. But the All-Star games are coming. The Senior Bowl is coming up next, too, after the Shrine Bowl. When do you start to really kind of think about next year, those rosters? Do you wait till the Super Bowl is over and wait for the combine?
I mean, I'm a casual observer sort of during the season and I pick up a couple things, but no, I'm solely focused on the regular season, the playoffs, and obviously what happens Super Bowl week. And then it really ramps up for me. But I mean, like, that's why guys like Tony are so good at their job. It's a 365 day a year job for Tony.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we lean on his expertise. So I acknowledge like things that happened and I sort of pick up on it, but I don't, my real draft intense preparation comes after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people. And by the way, Tony will send a scouting report in October on a player from like Coal Miners University in like Montana. And somehow that guy will get drafted in the seventh round and no one's ever heard of him. So can't wait to get Tony in here. Appreciative of Eric joining us. Let's get back to Championship Sunday. Arif Hasan is going to join us in just a few minutes as we start to get into the quarterback matchups. But
by the way, real quickly, we talked about the quarterbacks again. There's another nugget here. Mahomes, Hurts, Purdy, and Burrow, the youngest group of quarterbacks to play in Championship Sunday since we had Championship Sundays when
merger in 1970. So they're the youngest ever to play on a Championship Sunday.
Yes. Championship play began in 1970. These guys averaged 25 years and 98 days old. The previous record was 25 years and 231 days, and that was in 1996. So we had the youngest group of quarterbacks ever to play on Super Bowl Sunday. It just goes to the point that you started the show with. We're in an era now where we got really special dudes doing really special things very early in their careers.
And we may say this over the next couple of years, and the names may be different, but the premise still be true. Meaning, if Justin Herbert makes it to Championship Sunday, we'll make the same case, right? Yeah. Trevor Lawrence, you mentioned earlier, as another guy on the rise, a young guy. So
those guys got to beat one of those two teams playing on Sunday, though.
That's the thing.
That's the problem.
That's the thing, right? It gets tougher as it goes on. I want to really quick, before we just kind of switch over here, Arif just hopped in. We'll get him here in a second. I do want to talk about, you mentioned Nick Sirianni, the Philadelphia Eagles, and Jalen Hurts. We talked about how Patrick Mahomes has lost guys. We've talked about how, the San Francisco 49ers going through different quarterbacks. The Eagles are here mostly because of who they added. Is it fair to say that A.J. Brown is really the big difference that has propelled them to where they are? Or is that too simple?
Well, I think it's a big part of it because I think AJ Brown helped with Jalen Hurts' development. Like we can go back to last year's wild card game when the Eagles snuck in and went to Tampa, and just everything was too fast for Jalen, and the game, he wasn't reacting fast enough. Okay, so it's oversimplification for me because that's a part of it. Like AJ Brown can't make Jalen's anticipatory throws faster. Okay, he still like he can catch him, but Jalen had to adjust to the speed of a postseason game. Like Jalen's development from last year to this year is as much of a story, and they're intertwined because obviously it helps when you have AJ Brown to throw to outside of the Slim Reaper and Devontae Smith. So it's a great nickname, the Slim Reaper. But you know, you have Dallas Goedert, who might be the most underappreciated tight end in football.
Yeah,
you
have Miles Sanders. His name doesn't get brought up enough.
You have Miles Sanders. He's not, you know, he's not Christian McCaffrey, but he's damn good. Like he's damn good. It certainly helps that the Eagles are the first team in Super Bowl era to have four guys with double-digit sacks. Four dudes with double-digit sacks. And they have the best offense in football. I mean, offensive line, excuse me. The best offensive line in football. And now Lane Johnson's back. So, you know, look, A.J. Brown was a big part of it. But to me, it's all of that that has Philadelphia why they're here. Nick Sirianni realizing I can't call plays. I got to give that up if I want to be a head coach.
Okay? And not a lot of young coaches come to that realization until it's too late and it's hurting the team, right?
Correct. And he knew it was hurting the team. And that's why, again, tip of the cap to him, because he realized if I'm going to be the CEO, I can't be worried about this play sheet and not see what's happening on the field and make sure I react to that in real time.
Yeah.
A.J. Brown was a huge part of it, but Jalen stepping up his game outside of A.J. Brown. For example, he scored a rushing touchdown in that destruction of the Giants, right? He's now tied Cam Newton for the most rushing touchdowns by a quarterback all time in a combined one regular and postseason with 14. If he scores one more, he'll have the record. So it's all of that put together. A.J. Brown was a big part of it. Yeah. And you could make the argument outside of Tyreek, that might have been the offseason acquisition of the entire season
Look at where the Eagles are. Not that the Dolphins aren't where they are because of Tyreek. That's obviously not the case. But like you said, A.J. Brown's made a huge difference. Now, look, we're going to bring Arif in. Before we do, we mentioned earlier that the Chiefs and the Bengals are now at a pick 'em at Caesars Sportsbook. Caesars has the 49ers and Eagles game, with the 49ers being road underdogs, giving 2.5 points. If you're so inclined, and I am, I have written a ton of content coming out this weekend for betting on these games. Not just my predictions, but also some betting strategies to help limit your risk and maximize the opportunity to turn a profit. It's called Dutching. If you want to know what that is, make sure you read my article on Pro Football Network. And Caesars Sportsbook gives me the opportunity and all of you to do that as well. And talk about limiting your risk. With Caesars Sportsbook, if you place your first wager there, you're basically going to eliminate your risk. By placing your first wager, if you lose, you're going to get 100% of your stake back as a free bet. That's up to $1,250. And whether you win that bet or lose it, not only do you get the free bet, you'll also get 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits, which can be redeemed at any Caesars location. All you have to do is download the app. Use promo code PFNCZR, PFNCZR, and that promo code is going to trigger that offer, and you can bet without risk, knowing you're going to get it back if you lose, plus a host of other rewards that only Caesars Sportsbook is giving you. Now, Trey, speaking of that, I'd be remiss if I didn't announce that you and I will be together on the Caesars Sportsbook stage at the Super Bowl, at the Media Center. We got a host of cool things going on, not just this show, but we've got more than football we're going to do and talk to some of the best people and biggest names around the sport. So very excited to announce that. Trey and I will be there. Caesars Sportsbook, gracious with the opportunity to provide it to myself and Pro Football Network. So make sure you look out for that the week of the Super Bowl heading into the big game. Now, without further ado, let's bring our friend Arif Hasan into the studio. Arif, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I hear that you'll also be in Arizona. Is that,
yeah, that's
is that
the word? Yeah.
Is that the word?
Yeah. That's what I'm all hearing right. too. I hope it's true.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm excited.
Well, let's just say it's true. No,
yeah. Why not? Yeah.
Stamp it.
We'll manifest it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good.
But by the way, Brett, you mentioned the odds real quickly.
Yeah.
You know, going to the championship game. So now it's pick 'em, and the Eagles are what, 2.5? I think it is.
Two and a half right now.
So both spreads are under 3 points for conference championship Sunday. That's happened just once before.
I was going to ask. I knew you had that data. I knew you had those stats.
Yeah, 82. The Jets were 1 point underdogs against the Dolphins. Dolphins won 14-0. The Cowboys were 3 point favorites over Washington. Washington won 31-17. So, like, everything, like, championship Sunday is always great, but we talk about how the young quarterbacks, how good they are, and how they're doing this so early in their career. Everything is set up. Like the records for these teams coming in, the margin of error is so slim. Both these games are essentially pick'em games. And I'm sure Bengals fans are like, what the hell, man? We've beaten these guys 3 times in a row, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But that it couldn't be better. It couldn't be a better Sunday with the way this is setting up.
Well, Trey and Arif, there's only one way it could be better, and I'll tell you how.
Okay.
By starting the segment off with our super smash quarterback matchup of the week to lead us into the game.
Let's go.
Let's start with the NFC Championship. Brian, let's play it. They do such a good job.
So
shout
good.
Out. Shout out to the graphics team.
They are great, but like there's only 2 games, so we know what the quarterback matchups are. It's like, who's it going to be? I don't know.
Don't spoil it for the next one. Don't spoil it. Okay, NFC Conference Championship. That's redundant because NFC has conference in it, but that's besides the point. Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy, Philadelphia Eagles, San Francisco 49ers. Now, as you guys know, I said at the end of the show last week, I have with my betting model predicted the San Francisco 49ers to be going to the Super Bowl this year. Trey, is that going to happen based on what you're seeing as we go into this game?
Look, the Eagles are really good at home with Jalen Hurts. Let me just run some of the numbers for you here. He's 20-3 straight up in games in which his team is favored. Since week 11, 2021, the Eagles are 11-1 at home. Including the postseason with Jalen Hurts as a starting quarterback. The only loss coming to that Commanders on that inexplicable Monday night game where they just were pounded on the defensive line by the Washington offensive line. And that's where they had all those turnovers. Remember, there was that one catch that just popped out of the receiver's hands. I think it was Quez Watkins. So they're really good when they're supposed to win. We should all hope, by the way, that this game in any way, shape, or form resembles the 2019 matchup between these two in college when Jalen Hurts was at Oklahoma and Brock Purdy was at Iowa State. It was a late 2-point conversion pass by Purdy that was picked off. It was 42-41. Purdy threw for 282 yards, 5 touchdowns. He also ran for a score. Hurts, in his only year at Oklahoma, threw for 3 scores. He also ran for a pair of scores. So Purdy had 5 touchdowns. 6 touchdowns. Hurts had 5. It was an epic battle. Look,
wasn't Purdy down 42-21 going into the fourth quarter?
Well, there was. It had to be overtime, so it wasn't that much. But
crazy.
Yeah. Maybe also, it wasn't overtime. Yeah.
What is it? What does it tell you about like Breece Hall? That 281 yards and 5 passing touchdowns. How often does that happen?
Exactly.
Those yards had to come from somewhere.
Yeah, you're 100% right. So it's look, San Francisco hasn't lost since October. Like since October, okay? It's almost February, and they haven't lost since October. The only thing that concerns me about your betting model is that Purdy looked skittish in the first half against the Cowboys. Like there was that one play where they were in the red zone, then he ran backwards for like 10 yards. I'm like, what are you doing? And then at the end of the half,
it was a miracle that he let go of it. It was a miracle that it wasn't like a 20-yard sack.
And then at the end of the half, they had 7 seconds to get themselves in field goal range, and they're going to take one more play. And Purdy held onto the ball, and by the time it sailed out of bounds, I'm not sure there was 1 second left, but there was only one.
I don't think they ruled that correctly because the ball has to hit the ground.
I agree.
I wanted to ask this because what I saw, because we're all saying the same thing. I think the coach on the sideline who touched it may have saved the 49ers' ass on that play.
Yeah.
Reached up and touched it. I think that's when they're blowing it down.
Because did you see Shanahan when Purdy came over to the sidelines? He was had the play. He's like, you mother. I mean, like, Purdy was rattled in that game. There's no question about it.
He looked like a rookie.
And then the thing that settled him down was that improv play to Kittle, where Kittle was not the primary on that route. You know, and Purdy sort of moved around in the pocket a little bit, reestablished himself, saw Kittle breaking open, and Kittle made the juggling catch. After that play, Purdy was the Purdy we'd seen in the regular season and in the game against Seattle. But he was a little bit deer in the headlights in the first half of that division game.
Also, by the way, my favorite nickname for that play is the whole 9 yards, because it took 9 yards from touch to catch for Kittle to secure that ball.
That's very good. Very good. I don't know who came up with that, but that's really good.
It was a 49ers beat writer. I don't want to misattribute, but there were some pretty good ones out there. I think that's like pretty relevant, because Purdy's only faced one good defense outside of Dallas. And it's like a kind of good defense. The Washington Commanders defense, they're like ninth by a number of fairly important defensive metrics. The thing that's really important to me is pressure, right? Purdy had an issue with pressure in college, and it didn't come up very often, because they run this like RPO spread style, get rid of the ball super quickly, otherwise your linemen are going to be too far downfield type offense. So you didn't get to see him much against pressure in college. And with the nature of the 49ers passing game, which is quick, short, and the offensive line, which is like Trent Williams and Daniel Brunskill and, you know, McGlinchey, like they've got a great offensive line. He doesn't see a bunch of pressure, but the Cowboys enter that game number one in the NFL in pressure rate. And we saw what impact that had on Purdy. Guess who's number two in the NFL in pressure rate?
That would be the Eagles with 10 guys, four guys with double digit sacks too. Yeah. But I'm so glad you said pressure, because we talked about that before. Sacks are great. Pressure wins games. Like, if you get them to the ground, fantastic. If you get them off where they want to throw, better.
Let me provide, based on the tenor of both of what you guys are saying, let me provide a little counterbalance.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I wrote an article on this game, and as I'm doing the research for it, I came across something really interesting. The 49ers are one of the best rushing offenses in the NFL. Right. Mm-hmm. The Eagles are probably the best rushing offense in the NFL.
Yes.
And it's how they go.
They just ran for 274 in the divisional game. 268. It's 268.
Yeah. Let's not overstate our case.
Game six.
As we talk about the value of pressure and pressure on Brock Purdy, and that's the way to get to him. What I discovered, what I believe to be a weakness for the Philadelphia Eagles, though, is their ability to stop the run. They're ranked not great at it.
That's true.
In rushing yards per game. They're number three. They're the third worst team in the league.
It's been there all year. It's been there all year.
I will say this. Ever since Jordan Davis came back from injury, they retained Linval Joseph. They retained Ndamukong Suh. And they've done a better job at stopping the run since Davis came back, because they were like, hey, having him on the field is fantastic. Yeah. We're just going to have him on the field a lot more often than they did pre-injury. Like his snap rate, I think, went up by 50% or something like that. And that really shored up the rushing game. So they've actually gotten in the past against the run.
It'll need to show up on Sunday, because the pressure that they can generate won't matter if Purdy is able to run the ball and have play action at his disposal.
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
If they cannot stop the run, I don't know that the pressure that they can generate is going to come into effect. And let me just also add this other part. The Eagles need the run on offense to be successful. They need it. It's a huge part of what they do. It's a huge part of what Jalen Hurts does. It is massive to them. They're going up against one of, if not the best run stopping defense in the NFL, who has the athletes in a Fred Warner and a Dre Greenlaw at the linebacker level to play the RPO really well, to spy Jalen Hurts.
Here's the thing. They don't play the RPO very well. That's the one thing that defense doesn't do. The defense does everything. They stop the run. They stop inside runs, outside runs. They play the deep pass really well, among the best in the league. They play the short pass really well, among the best in the league. When you look at how they perform against RPOs, not play action, RPOs, they're like 19th or 20th. They're not bad, but they're not good. And if you take a look at how they do against quarterback runs, specifically teams with quarterbacks that run and quarterback runs, they're about league average. It is a massive difference. And if you take a look at teams that are good against the run, that are bad against quarterback runs and they go up against a team that does quarterback runs, yeah, they still continue to be bad. It's just new ball game.
To me, more than the AFC Championship game, and Trey, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. This game to me is a game where the football matchups are so crucial, yes, and so perfectly matched up against each other, more than than the AFC Championship game. Do you feel that way too, Trey?
Styles make fights, right?
Absolutely.
And these guys match up fantastically with each other. There's a talent gap in the other game, which we will address. But these two guys, I mean, these two teams, it's just, you have this, we can do this. You do this, it's fantastic across the board.
Yeah.
And to your thing, we sort of, Arif, before you got on, we were talking about it. Like, Hurts has 14 rushing touchdowns on the season. He gets one more. He has the record by himself. He's right now tied with Cam Newton for the most rushing touchdowns by a quarterback in regular and postseason combined. So it's going to be something they're going to have to stop, because that allows everything else kind of for the offense of Philadelphia to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing I found kind of interesting is, you know, in the aggregate, San Francisco by far is like the number one defense, right? When you take a look at some of these more granular statistics, an interesting story kind of pops out. So in terms of like yards per dropback, they're like seventh or eighth against the pass in yards per dropback. But in expected points, they're actually, you know, first, second, third, somewhere around there. They're in the top three. And there's usually not that big a difference between the two. And I think what ends up happening is that because they're so good against the run, in these high leverage, short yardage situations, they do a phenomenal job of stopping teams from converting in goal to go on third and short. They're one of the best teams in the NFL at stopping that. And so there's a bunch of empty yards that they allow people to give up that don't turn into anything. They don't generate first downs off of them, which is great. But I think the problem here is that the Eagles are the number one team in the league in short yardage because of that QB sneak. And I don't know that the 49ers, who are generally great against short yardage runs, will specifically have an answer to the way the Eagles generate those short yardage successes because of how, I don't know if unique is the right word, but how successful they are with the QB sneak and how they're basically exploiting, I'm not going to say a loophole in the rules, but getting around the way the rules are designed in terms of assisting the runner. Right.
So the game comes down to whose quarterback can fall forward the best. Excellent.
Yeah.
That is what.
It's back in the 30s, baby.
I am excited. All right, let's do this real quick before we go to the next game. Give me your gut feel. I'm not asking you to give me, you know, it in writing and blood, but give me your gut feel, Trey.
I it's so hard for me to trust Brock Purdy, honestly. The one defense he goes up against, he starts looking rattled. I'm going to go with Jalen Hurts.
All right, Trey.
Yeah, look, he's the fifth rookie quarterback to play on Championship Sunday. None of them have made it to the Super Bowl. I think San Francisco's a better team, but the quarterback is going to be a problem for them in this game. And it's sort of the antithesis of what he's been in this 7-game winning streak. He's been absolutely incredible. But, you know, I saw some things on Sunday or against the Cowboys or Saturday. I was like, that bothers me a little.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts is like the one thing I know, Jalen Hurts won't get rattled. I mean, he may not make all the plays. He's not getting rattled.
Absolutely.
He's not getting rattled.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy came out of the womb ready to roll.
Yep.
And I think I'm leaning Philadelphia there.
The betting model, behavior bets model, has a 24-21 San Francisco 49ers.
So wouldn't surprise me either.
I mean, we will see. But yeah, exactly. One of those, it's just like the other game we're going to talk about now. Anybody's guess. Let's talk about that other game. I wonder who the quarterbacks will be. Let's find out.
Chad Henne.
Okay, it was, in fact, to no one's surprise, Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow. Look, the obvious storyline that is going to be talked about ad nauseum, and I think maybe a little too much for my opinion, is Patrick Mahomes' ankle. Trey and Arif, prior to the ankle injury, I would have taken the Chiefs against anybody. Trey, you have said, and we highlighted it after the game against the Bills, the Bengals' best is better than anybody's best.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on this game coming up?
Well, let me just run over some things that happened in the Bills game with Cincinnati, okay? They had three new or backup offensive linemen, right? Three offensive linemen that weren't supposed to be playing. in a game on the road in snow in Buffalo with three backup offensive linemen. They had no turnovers. They had two penalties for 9 yards. They gave up one sack for minus 2 yards. They ran for 170 plus yards, had 71 plays and 30 first downs. I just want to be clear. If they do that, nobody's beating them. Okay. Yeah. That's the cleanest I've ever seen a team play, especially with three backup offensive linemen. Just to put in perspective, 30 first downs. Okay. In their two previous games combined, they had 33 and they had 30 against the Buffalo Bills. They averaged 5.1 yards per carry. If the Bengals play that clean, they're not losing to anyone ever. Okay. The question then becomes, can they be that clean? Can they replicate that? I don't know if it's possible. I mean, like, no penalties, no sacks, no turnover, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, look, the matchup is all – we're always focusing on the quarterback. And now with Mahomes, you know, he said he was good to go. He went full participant in practice today, and that's why the line is back to a pick 'em. You know, that's not going to decide this game. What's going to decide this game to me is the linebackers for the Chiefs, because they were worn out in that November matchup in Cincinnati. You know, Burrow just attacked the middle of the field and they didn't stop the run. And against Jacksonville, they popped off some big runs. Like, for all the talk about, oh, the offensive line's got to protect Mahomes better and all this kind of stuff, if the Chiefs linebackers, specifically Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, those guys don't show up, and Leo Chenal, the rookie out of Wisconsin, if those guys don't have great games, I don't think anything else matters.
So here's, like, the way that I look at that offensive line, because obviously Lyle Collins is still on IR. The two starting offensive linemen that are still available did not participate in practice. So
I don't think either one of those guys are playing.
I would imagine not, right? It's one thing to do this, and this is no shade to Ed Oliver or Daquan Jones. They're both really excellent players. But it's one thing to do it against them versus Chris Jones, right? Yeah. That's a totally different animal, right? And so I think that that's going to be a bigger concern. I don't think you're going to get a clean, no penalty performance. I don't think you're going to get 33 or whatever first downs just because there's just going to be that much more pressure. Yeah. And Burrow's ability to navigate the pocket, have pocket presence has, last year was fantastic. This year is even better. I cannot imagine a player who has improved more in a skill that was already a strength of theirs. He's done it, but this is Chris Jones, right? And George Karlaftis does not look bad. They do find ways to get him unblocked, whether it's, through different, Spagnuolo's just a pretty smart defensive coordinator in terms of finding ways to isolate, some of your most athletic players. They do a great job there. And that rookie secondary, like, I'm worried, right? Just because, like, Jalen Watson and Trent McDuffie, I mean, they're rookies, but they're playing out of their minds in every game.
McDuffie's been incredible. And Watson, that interception was like to essentially seal the game was absolutely nuts. It was absolutely nuts.
And so I'm not expecting them to win even most of their reps against like T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, but I'm expecting them to win enough so that that backup offensive line becomes a serious concern, concern. So
And here's the other thing about that game in Cincinnati. And, Joe Burrow, I think, threw for 286, a couple of touchdowns. And I'm trying to see how much they ran for. Burrow, P. Ryan had 100 plus yards because that's when Mixon was still dealing with the concussion issues. Mm-hmm. Even with all of that, the Chiefs had the lead in the fourth quarter and were driving. And it was a Travis Kelce fumble.
That's
right. It was a Travis Kelce fumble in Cincinnati where he went to college. That really flipped that game back in favor of the Bengals. So, I listened to, by the way, the New Heights podcast with the Kelce brothers is just fantastic.
Chef's kiss.
I highly recommend. And, Jason was sort of like egging him on a little bit. Like,
of course.
Yeah, you're going to see this game. He goes, can't wait. Love to see those guys. Yeah. So I think Travis feels like he has some unfinished business to do against, like, all the stuff about, the other two times they played last year, they were up 11 twice and all that kind of stuff. And, we were up 14 in the AFC championship game early and, the 11 at the half and they lost it both times. If Kelce doesn't fumble that ball, I'm not sure we're having the narrative.
Agreed.
Can I provide some numbers for that?
Yeah.
Let's go.
You guys know if you read any of the stuff and how I look at games and behavior in particular, behavior has to occur in a window of time, right? It exists in windows of time, which means time of possession is so important for teams to perform, scoring, first downs, all of those different things.
Yeah.
That fumble gave the Bengals an extra window of time. That window of time was 4 minutes and 41 seconds. The Bengals went and scored a touchdown when they got that extra position. That 4 minutes and 41 seconds, had it shifted to the Chiefs at the rate the Chiefs score, which is just under one full point per minute of possession time, that would have been potentially enough to seal the game. They would have been up by two scores.
Yeah.
That's how much, or how, excuse me, how little margin for error there is. And one last thing just on that same point, we talk about Mahomes' ankle, how much of a concern is that in this game? He left the game with 14 minutes and 9 seconds left in the second quarter. Didn't come back till after halftime. You could tell when he came back after halftime, first time he's really playing on the injured ankle. It took him most of that quarter to figure out how to adapt to it. With 2 minutes and 17 seconds left in the third, they had they went down for that field goal drive with him. You could tell on that drive he figured it out. They possessed the ball from the beginning of that drive to the end of the game for 10 minutes and 57 seconds. They scored 10 points in 10 minutes and 57 seconds of possession time.
About
that's exactly their season average. 0.993 points per minute of possession time. I really think the Chiefs are going to be okay. I don't think this is a concern. The behavior best model has this also 24-21 Kansas City Chiefs.
That's every single one of these games has been a three-point game. And, you know, every single one of them between these two teams has been a three-point game. So that doesn't surprise me. You never know what motivates people, right? But, like, the Bengals are – they're popping off. I mean, they're popping off. Burrowhead is what they're saying now. Yeah. Not Arrowhead, Burrowhead.
Look. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they got T-shirts made. Burrowhead.
Like, the T-shirts, now we're hitting hubris territory.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow's amazing. Say
it, it's another thing to wear it.
Look, would it surprise me if the Bengals won? Absolutely not. I do think they're better top to bottom. The difference for me always is I think Mahomes can do things that nobody else can do. How can he do those things with the ankle? Because, you know, he looked great walking off the stage, but today at the press conference.
You saw those Zapruder films?
It's unbelievable. Yeah. We were laughing at the one guy. The guy with the jeans must have blocked it so we can't see him. But, like, shut up, man. Just get out of here with that
guy. Well, we also had, like, a top-down practice. Like, I don't even know where that came from. Where are the reporters allowed to sit?
Someone got into the catwalk and was, Mission Impossible trying to get some footage there.
It's just crazy. But, like, it's hard for me to believe that somebody's going to beat those guys four times in a row. It's just hard for me to believe that. Like, I can believe that the Chiefs have beaten the Broncos, 15 times in a row, because the Broncos have been terrible. But not, at some point when you're a good team, like, pride kicks in.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, now, that being said, I still to this day cannot believe the Buffalo Bills in the 90s lost four straight Super Bowls. They just ran into an incredible coaching display by a young Bill Belichick.
Which was their best chance, that first one.
That was their best chance, and then, Washington, the Hogs just beat them down. And then the Cowboys were one of the most dynastic teams we've seen in the history of the NFL.
Well, that Washington team was one of the best single year teams that we've seen. It was incredible. Yeah. So
it was amazing.
You've mentioned different teams here. To your point, the Chiefs are playing the same team four times in a row now. That's even incredibly more difficult to lose to the same team four times in a row.
And I'll say this, obviously they're not coming off of a bye, but I think it's instructive, the famous Andy Reid off of a bye record. So what it speaks to is his level of preparation and ability to isolate what's happening to opposing defenses and prepare for them, right? And I think that even though it's not quote unquote off of a bye or anything like that, it is an example of, he's seen this, defense, it's not changed. Right. In the number of times that they've played them, he's seen this defense a number of times. I think he's beginning. I think he understands kind of where those soft spots are. And in fact, we know that because they've entered the fourth quarter so many times with the lead. It's just all of these small, like low frequency, high impact events like a fumble, have changed the outcomes. But we know that the Chiefs know how to beat the Bengals. They just have to, out execute. And to the Patrick Mahomes point, obviously it's much better. Right. If that ankle is fine or if they're you know, putting an irresponsible amount of pain medication into his ankle or whatever, right? Obviously, that, you know, produces a better quarterback performance. But even if he's limited in his mobility, but has the ability to generate power on his throws, the reason he's so good on those scrambles, the reason he's so good on the run, the reason he's so good at improvised plays is because he has an unparalleled sense of the field. He knows where everybody is at all times, and crucially, where they're going to be a tenth of a second from now. Right. That there is nobody in the NFL that has that level of precision or awareness of everything that's happening on the field. And that stays with him, whether or not he's scrambling. The scrambling maximizes that particular skill set of his, but that skill he always has. And so his ability to isolate kind of, you know, hey, Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be open here, or Travis Kelce, we have a weird mind meld connection where he's going to run a route that nobody in the history of the NFL has run before or will again. And I know where that's going to be.
Give me gut check.
Give me a couple things and then we'll do this. So people understand. Is it still Pick'em? I'm looking at Caesar Sports now. Is it still Pick'em?
Let me pull it back up.
Yeah, it's Pick'em. It's a Pick'em. Okay. Yep. All right. So, I have a feeling that eventually at some point this will be the Chiefs will be an underdog in this game. I do believe that. The last two times we've had a home underdog in the conference championship game were 2015 and 2017.
Yeah.
That's when the Broncos won and the Eagles won, and they both went on to win the Super Bowl. Joe Burrow and company are trying to do something that hasn't been done in 30 plus years, or just about 30 years. Beat a number one seed in the playoff 2 years in a row. Last year, they beat Tennessee in the first round, and obviously Kansas City's the number one seed. The last team to beat a number one seed in the postseason in two straight seasons was that dynastic Cowboys team we talked about. They beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship game at Candlestick Park, and then the Bills were the number one seed in the AFC the next year when they beat them 30-13 in Atlanta.
Okay.
So it's really hard to take down a number one seed 2 years in a row. And that's
well,
that's
usually what, if you're that good, one of those years you're going to be the number one seed, right?
So exactly,
it's a pretty
That's fair. So give me and by the way, the Chiefs being a pick in a pick'em situation almost makes it feel like
how
they're
wild
the underdog,
is that?
Quite honestly.
Yeah. Listen, Patrick Mahomes has never been an underdog in a playoff game in his career.
Yeah, and there's a real chance that happens.
Yeah, a real chance. I mean, you know, it's just nuts. Absolutely not.
All right. Give me your gut check here. We'll start Arif with you. Give me the gut check. Chiefs, Bengals. What's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me it's the Chiefs. So just super quick. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. Joe Burrow might be number two. I don't know. But the difference between one and two these past couple of years has been massive. So that's just kind of my take on it.
Okay. Trey?
Listen, I picked the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl to start the year. So I'm not diverting from that. Yeah, really. Way to go out on a limb. So I'm not diverting from that. But I also spent 6 years working in St. Louis. Missouri is the show me state. Man, you got to show me you can beat these guys, and then I'll believe it. Right? So, yeah. I mean, like, I'm sticking with the Chiefs because, like I said, it started the year, and I give up now. But at the end of
right before cashing?
Exactly. At the end of the day, I've said it for months. Cincinnati's best is better than anybody's best. And if Chris Jones has to be a war daddy on Sunday, he has to be a war daddy.
Okay? It's on him, I think.
He had one tackle for loss and did not have a sack in the November and in the December matchup between these two guys. He got to be that guy. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to be that guy, then the linebackers can do the things that they need to do.
Yeah.
That, to me, forget everything else. That is the recipe for the Chiefs.
If Nick Bolton gets a runway, there you go.
Yeah. Nick Bolton and Willie Gay are more important to this game than anyone else is talking about, in my opinion.
Let me, as I said, you know, just a little bit ago, the model does have the Chiefs winning this game 24-21. I'll also say this, and again, I've made my connections to the Chiefs organization public a bunch of times on this show. I know the trainer who's working with Patrick Mahomes. He is one of, if not the best in the biz, and he is with Patrick 365 days a year, 12 months a year. All of that scrambling, all of that mobility, all of that change of direction, that's all they work on. He's in good hands. I also say this, I'm really connected to that offensive line room.
Sure.
And I can tell you, they are pissed at themselves even though they shouldn't be, that Patrick Mahomes got hurt on their watch. They take pride in that. That is something that if he plays on Sunday and all signs point to him playing, that will be a point of emphasis for them. So that only reinforces what I believe the model to be correct. And I think I might get, by the way, undefeated in my playoff bracket. I've gotten every single
winner at you, Mr. Productive.
And against the spread. So
okay, that part's even more because there's been like what, one upset in the playoffs?
Yes, I guess one upset. I did pick your Vikings to lose. I apologize, my friend. Okay. Trey, we will see you next week. Arif, we will see you next week. You will also see me next week, everybody. I am Brett Yarris, lead NFL analyst, Arif Hassan for Pro Football Network, and Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst, Mr. Trey Wingo. Just a couple weeks till we're all together in Arizona for the Super Bowl. Can't wait to do it. See you all then. We'll see what happens. Bye.